And now for reading and writing and radio.
Everybody knows the story of the three little pigs, or at least they think they do. But I'll let you in on a little secret. Nobody knows the real story because nobody has ever heard my side of the story. I'm the wolf, Alexander T. Wolf. You can call me Al. I don't know how this whole big bad wolf thing got started, but it's all wrong. Maybe it's because of our diet. Hey, it's not my fault wolves eat cute little animals like bunnies and sheep and pigs. That's just the way we are. If cheeseburgers were cute, folks would probably think you were big and bad, too. But like I was saying, the whole big bad wolf thing is all wrong. The real story is about a sneeze and a cup of sugar.
That is the start of the true story of the Three Little Pigs by Alexander T. Wolf. But you can write a story from your own point of view, or from anybody else's, can't you?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Today I'm going to tell you the true story of the three little pigs, told by the wolf. Let's get on with it. He goes on, "Way back in once upon a time, I was making a birthday cake for my dear old granny. I had a terrible sneezing cold. I ran out of sugar, so I walked down the street to ask my neighbor for a cup of sugar. Now, this neighbor was a pig, and he wasn't too bright either. He had built his whole house out of straw. Can you believe it? I mean, who in his right mind would build a house of straw? So, of course, the minute I knocked on the door, it fell right in. I didn't want to just walk into somebody else's house, so I called, 'Little pig, are you in?' No answer. I was just about to go home without the cup of sugar for my dear old granny's birthday cake, when my nose started to itch. I felt a sneeze coming on. Well, I huffed, and I snuffed, and I sneezed a great sneeze. And you know what? That whole darn straw house fell down, and right in the middle of the pile of straw was the first little pig, dead as a doornail. He had been home the whole time. It seemed a shame to leave a perfectly good ham dinner lying there in the straw, so I ate it up. Think of it as a big cheeseburger just lying there. I was feeling a little better, but I still didn't have my cup of sugar, so I went to the next neighbor's house. This neighbor was the first little pig's brother. He was a little smarter, but not much. He had built his house of sticks. I rang the bell on the stick house. Nobody answered. I called, 'Mr. Pig, are you in?' He yelled back, 'Go away, wolf. You can't come in. I'm shaving the hairs on my chinny chin chin.' I had just grabbed the doorknob when I felt another sneeze coming on. I huffed and I snuffed and I tried to cover my mouth, but I sneezed a great sneeze. And you're not going to believe it, but this guy's house fell down just like his brother's. When the dust cleared, there was the second little pig, dead as a doornail. Wolf's honor. Now, you know food will spoil if you just leave it out in the open, so I did the only thing there was to do. I had dinner again. Think of it as a second helping. But I was getting awfully full. My cold was feeling a little better, though, and I still didn't have that cup of sugar for my dear old granny's birthday cake, so I went to the next house. This guy was the first and second little pig's brother. He must have been the brains of the family because he'd built his house of bricks. I knocked on the brick house. No answer. I called, 'Mr. Pig, are you in?' And do you know what that rude little porker answered? 'Get out of here, wolf. Don't bother me again.' Talk about impolite. He probably had a whole sack full of sugar, and he wouldn't give me even one little cup for my dear, sweet old granny's birthday cake. What a pig! I was just about to go home and maybe make a nice birthday card instead of a cake when I felt my cold coming on. I huffed, and I snuffed, and I sneezed once again. Then the third little pig yelled, "And your old granny can sit on a pin!" Now, I'm usually a pretty calm fellow, but when somebody talks about my granny like that, I go a little crazy. When the cops drove up, of course I was trying to break down this pig's door, and the whole time I was huffing and puffing and sneezing and making a real scene. The rest, as they say, is history. The news reporters found out about the two pigs I had for dinner. They figured a sick guy going to borrow a cup of sugar didn't sound very exciting, so they jazzed up the story with all of that huff and puff and blow your house down stuff. And they made me the big bad wolf. That's it. The real story. I was framed. But maybe you could loan me a cup of sugar? Now, of course, this story isn't really by the wolf. It's by a man whose name I'm not sure I'm pronouncing right, John Skizka. The cover says, "By A. Wolf as Told to John Skizka." And it's a Viking book, 1989. What the writer has done is to put himself into the skin of the wolf and told the story from the wolf's point of view, out of the wolf's eyes and his thinking. A bit devious thinking, you might think, but it's still the wolf. Let's listen to some other points of view. I have here a book called Prayers from the Ark by Carmen Bernos de Gastold, as translated by Rumor Godden. Now, I'm sure you know the old, old story of Noah, of Noah's Ark, how God warned Noah to build a great ship, the Ark, and put all the animals on it because it was going to rain for 40 days and 40 nights, and the animals all going on it two by two. This book of the prayers tells Noah's reactions to being on the Ark through a prayer and some other prayers. Here is how Noah's begins. He says, "And you think what you'd be like if you'd been, say, 30 days on a cramped ark with all those animals. Lord, what a menagerie! Between your downpour and these animal cries, one cannot hear oneself think. The days are long, Lord. All this water makes my heart sink. When will the ground cease to rock under my feet? The days are long." And the poem goes on a bit from Noah's point of view. Now, the prayers of the various animals aren't about being on the ark, but they're speaking to the Lord, each from his or her own point of view. Noah says, "All this water makes my heart sink." But the little ducks say, "Dear God, give us a flood of water. Let it rain tomorrow and always. Give us plenty of little slugs and other luscious things to eat. Protect all folk who quack and everybody who knows how to swim." And here is a prayer that a little bird might make. "Dear God, I don't know how to pray by myself very well, but will you please protect my little nest from wind and rain? Put a great deal of dew on the flowers, many seeds in my way. Make your blue very high, your branches lissom. Let your kind light stay late in the sky and set my heart brimming with such music that I must sing, sing, sing. Please, Lord." And here is the prayer of the mouse. "I am so little and gray, dear God, how can you keep me in mind? Always spied upon, always chased. Nobody gives me anything, and I nibble meagerly at life. Why do they reproach me with being a mouse? Who made me but you? I only ask to stay hidden. Give me my hunger's pittance, safe from the claws of that devil with green eyes." And from that very green-eyed devil, who is also a creature of the Lord, we have a prayer. And this one is, "Lord, I am the cat. It is not exactly that I have something to ask of you. No, I ask nothing of anyone. But If you, by some chance, in some celestial barn, have a little white mouse or a saucer of milk, I know someone who would relish them. Wouldn't you like someday to put a curse on the whole race of dogs? If so, I should say, amen. Each of these poems is written as if the writer were inside that creature's skin, feeling its feelings, thinking its thoughts. I myself have written a book like that. It's called Spring Song. My mother sang it to me and my brother and sisters when we were small, three verses, what the crow, what the duck, and what the frog felt about spring coming. And when I grew up and had kids of my own, I sang those verses to them, and my kids said, okay, now sing us about what the dog says, what the pig says, what the cow says, what do they say about spring? And my response was, those are all the verses that my mother ever sang to me. But then I thought, well, how would the pig feel about spring? So I put myself as best I could inside of a pig with spring coming up, and I made up this song. Oink, oink, grunts the pig. Winter gives no chance to dig. Spring has loosened up the ground. Now I'm off to root around. Because, of course, a pig digging in the dirt with his nose is going to get an awfully cold and sore nose trying to dig in the snow and the ice. For the cow, I pictured how glad a cow must be to get out into the spring pastures. Moo, moo, lows the cow. Spring is here, I will allow. No more dusty hay to eat, but green grass that's fresh and sweet. For the cat, I also made it equivocal. Mew, mew, meows the cat. I don't care this way or that. I shall miss the cozy fire. Still fresh catnip doth inspire. And here is the goat. Ma, ma, blats the goat. Wattles swinging at her throat. Frisky whiskey fills my blood. Who can lie and chew the cud? And I did a number of other animals, including the human animals, the boys and the girls at the end. Spring, shout the girl and boy. Spring's a time we do enjoy. Going barefoot, climbing trees, doing nothing if we please. When Robert Louis Stevenson wrote A Child's Garden of Verses, he was a grown man, but in the verses he put himself inside a very young child, and he sees the world through the eyes of a little kid. Oh, how I like to go up in a swing, or I have a little shadow that goes in and out with me. This is one of his poems that's been much criticized. It goes like this. Little Indian Sioux or Crow, little frosty Eskimo, little Turk or Japanese, oh, don't you wish that you were me? You have seen the scarlet trees and the lions overseas. You have eaten ostrich eggs and turned the turtles off their legs. Such a life is very fine, but it's not so nice as mine. You must often, as you trod, have wearied not to be abroad. You have curious things to eat. I am fed on proper meat. You must dwell beyond the foam, but I am safe and live at home. Little Indian Sioux or Crow, little frosty Eskimo, little Turk or Japanese, oh, don't you wish that you were me? This describes in a child's voice a very natural feeling of very young children, that what they're used to is what is the normal, usual thing. Anything else is strange and different. And shouldn't it then bother the little Turk or Japanese to be strange and different, not to live safe at home? You have curious things to eat, but I am fed on proper meat. Now, some people say that this is a smug poem, a self-satisfied poem, a poem that runs down people who are different from us, who live in other parts of the world. It's a dangerous poem. What it really is the way a young child sees reality, life from her or his point of view. The danger is when people grow up continuing to think that they're the center of the universe, that the sun revolves around them, and to behave accordingly. This poem, to those of us that are over about 5 years old, makes us smile and realize that this child hasn't grown up yet, or that he or she would realize that the Japanese child is at home. There's another Robert Louis Stevenson poem that goes, when I am grown to man's estate, that means grown up to be a man, when I am grown to man's estate, I shall be very proud and great and tell the other girls and boys, not to meddle with my toys. We smile at this, too, because when you're grown up, you're not supposed to be concerned with telling other girls and boys not to meddle with your toys. But this has its edge, too, because many a grown-up has different sorts of toys that he or she is busy warning other grown-ups not to meddle with. It's fun for you as a writer to take other points of view from time to time. You can be anything you want to be, a tree, a pencil sharpener, Noah, the elephant on the ark, or the mouse who's afraid of the elephant's big feet. You can be the actual ark itself, full to bursting with all those animals groaning from its load within and the rain without. Today, I've been talking only about point of view using the word I. And this is the easiest way to write from a different point of view, to be the I in that situation. There are other ways in writing of taking different points of view, but I suggest that today we stick with the I. Let's write today putting ourselves in some other skin. And when you write from I, take time to put yourself as completely into the skin of whoever or whatever it is that you're being, that we, the readers, feel like we're that person or animal or thing, too. A story is fun, but it doesn't have to be a story. Here is Charlie in Rebecca Caudill's book, Did You Carry the Flag Today, Charlie? He's a kindergartner, a pre-kindergartner, who's been outside of the schoolhouse, curled up into a ball on a rock in the warm rain. It's summertime. And when he comes in, he says to the other kids and the teachers, and the teacher, "You know what I was doing out there?" asked Charlie. "I was making out like I was a rock sitting there on the side of the hill in the rain, and I was making out like I was dusty where people had stepped on me, and snakes had curled around me, and lizards and spiders and ants had crawled over me, and squirrels had cracked hickory nuts on me and left the shells lying on me, and I was hot, too, and the rain fell on me and washed me off and made me feel so cool and clean. Do you reckon a rock could feel like that?" "Well, Charlie, you made me feel like a rock." And Charlie, that's almost a poem, a tone poem about being a rock. One last thing. You know, it's not only fun to try to change your point of view and useful to you as a writer, but it has a much larger value to you as a person. In trying to feel what another person is feeling, in thinking, as the Indian saying is, to walk in his moccasins, you begin to develop the trait of empathy. Empathy is different from sympathy, where you feel sympathetic or sorry for what another person or creature is going through. "Oh, Purpot, my kitty cat, I'm so sorry you've got to go to the vet and have your tail get stitches in it where it got caught in the when the screen door slammed on it." That is sympathy. Empathy is feeling what it's actually like in your imagination to have your tail slammed in the screen door, to be all frightened there on the gleaming counter at the vet's, the smell of the medicines and the antiseptics that you don't understand, your body all tensed up, to have the stitches going in and out of your skin. Or take humans. You know how you felt in a family disagreement, or in a family very special moment. Try to put yourself in your mother's place to feel and think what she was feeling and thinking, your brother, your sister. Or put yourself in the place of a new student in your class, say a student from Vietnam who doesn't even speak English yet. How does it feel to be that girl or to be that boy? That's empathy, and it takes practice. But you will be a more aware person, a more caring person. You'll stretch your heart. You'll find it harder to be mean and to be petty and to be thoughtless. And all of this will make you a much finer and happier and worthwhile human being. As a byproduct, by the way, people will care more about you, too, because you're empathetic. Writing things down is valuable, but it's an even greater value to be empathetic. So today, let's write and put ourselves in other creatures' skins.
USSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.